Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
To the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got good, sort of, bad, and crazy martinis for you today. The good martini is a debate, and it's a good debate, I think, that we're having today, Jim, because maybe specifically in this race, but also perhaps in the larger conservative movement in a race such as this. And that's the story of Mark Sanford, the one-time congressman from South Carolina, easily elected twice as governor of South Carolina, obviously had a major failing with the whole Appalachian Trail Argentine mistress scandal. He was near the end of his second term. Anyway, when that happened, it clearly derailed a possible presidential bid. Now, of course, he's running for the vacated House seat that was formerly held by Tim Scott, who is now in the U.S. Senate. Tuesday, Sanford easily defeated Curtis Bostick, and now Sanford will run against the sister of Stephen Colbert in about 4 weeks to see who actually goes to Capitol Hill. It's a Republican-leaning district, as we've mentioned. And Jim, obviously, there's a lot of people, myself included, I must admit, who believe that sending Mark Sanford back at this time is not necessarily a good thing. The fact that he emerged from this 16-man field is kind of depressing to me because this is a guy who obviously failed in a major way. And one of my general rules of thumb is if your wife can't trust you, why should I trust you? On a larger scale, he's going to be a lightning rod, even if he wins, and the polls are very tight between these two candidates. He's going to be a lightning rod throughout this campaign. You know the media is going to make a big deal out of this and try to tar all Republicans with the past of Mark Sanford here. So I think there's a lot of negatives going into this, even if he wins in 4 weeks.
Mark Sanford is what Mark Sanford is. And I'm going to, you know, make a kind of a cautious, I don't know if it's even say endorsement, although that would only make me the second member of my family to publicly endorse him. My dad has decided to create the headache for me by publicly endorsing him. As someone, by the way, who vacations in this district, Greg, you have some say in this matter, and I like to think of myself as an honorary Hilton Head South Carolinian, so I have a bit more say than you do. No, if you're wondering, you know, there are a lot of people outside of South Carolina saying, oh my goodness, how could they pick this guy? Don't they know about the Appalachian? Well, yes, everybody does know about the Appalachian Trail. Everybody outside the state sees him almost entirely through that lens. The thing is that the people in this district know him better than that. They know him through the entirety of, like I said, being a congressman for a portion of this district. The district lines were a little bit different back in the 90s. Being a governor for two terms. After the scandal came to light, the state legislature considered impeaching him and decided against it. And they decided to censure him. Now, you know, as I wrote in the Morning Jolt today, you know, he's addressed this in interview after interview to the point where people are telling him, please stop talking about this. He's listed both his, you know, home phone number and his cell phone number for anybody who has questions about these things. Something that I think is easily overlooked is that from the beginning of this primary process, he has attended just about every candidate event that every small local Republican club or Republican group put on in the district. Plenty of public events. I mean, he just went out and he talked to the voters time and again. Curtis Bostick, although having a you know very solid support in groups like evangelical churches and homeschoolers, missed a bunch of them. And a couple of people noticed that. And people kind of wondered why he didn't do a bunch of them, including ones in Beaufort County. Now, he ended up doing better in Beaufort County than he did in the other counties yesterday, which kind of surprised me a little. But basically, people in this district feel like they know Mark Sanford, and they feel like it's kind of been over and done and dealt with 4 years ago. You know, you and I can argue that this should be more important than this, but, you know, Mark Sanford put himself before the voters and said, what do you think? If you think this disqualifies me, vote for one of the other guys. If you don't think this disqualifies me and you think that there's more to me than this one scandal and I'm the kind of guy you trust to go to Washington and hold down spending. And oh, by the way, as both the governor and congressman, Mark Sanford did have a very solid record. The Cato Institute gave him an A. I remember very famously he brought two pigs to the floor of the state legislature in Columbia, South Carolina, to argue about too much pork barrel spending in the state bills. This is a guy who has always been fighting this fight long before the Tea Parties are on the scene. And I think a lot of people respect that. Now, does this create an issue in the general election? Sure, although let's point out this is not occurring in a vacuum. The only thing that most people in South Carolina know about Elizabeth Colbert Bush right now is that she's Stephen Colbert's sister. When you actually put her on the spotlight and ask her questions, as Chuck Todd did a few weeks ago, you get just this meaningless word salad coming out of her. And I actually looked on her website. Do you want to know some really good news, Greg?
What's that?
She strongly opposes waste and abuse.
Really?
And fraud, too. Those are bad. And you know what? We shouldn't take away Social Security and Medicare. As far as I know, she might be a very nice woman, but there's nothing indicating that she's very well-versed in any of these issues. And that was another thing that came up in these, you know, various candidate debates, is that Mark Sanford is a guy who eats, sleeps, and breathes. Well, I shouldn't say sleeps. he eats and breathes policy issues and spending issues and how to keep things down and how to cut costs. One of the kind of visual trademarks of his campaign is his campaign signs are made out of plywood and spray paint. And kind of the joke is, if he's this frugal with his campaign funds, imagine how frugal he'll be with taxpayer funds. My attitude is, the time to hash this out, at least for folks on the right, was in both the primary and then the runoff. So now the question is, do you want Mark Sanford, the guy who's fought for fiscal conservatism throughout his whole career, or do you want a woman who's running on her brother's famous last name? For me, that's a no-brainer. And I actually don't think this is going to be that impossible a race for the Republicans to win. For perspective, yesterday, in the runoff, he won a little over 26,000 votes, and Elizabeth Colbert Bush won about 15,000 votes in the Democratic primary. I'm stunned by the number of Republicans who are looking at this and saying, oh, well, that race is lost, which makes me think they don't really know this district that well.
Yeah, it's a very right-leaning district, and I think he's probably still got the edge, although a recent PPP poll showed that Colbert Bush was up by two, but again, it is a PPP poll. I think you're right about one point, and that's that If I'm going to be disappointed, I should be disappointed probably in the electorate. No offense to your family down there. But to me, character matters. And maybe this is more about what he wants to accomplish than about rehabilitating himself. I still have questions about that. On to Martini number two now. This one has been getting a lot of play the last couple of days. This from ABC News. The Department of Defense is making it clear the military opposes awarding Purple Hearts to the victims of the Fort Hood shooting. A Pentagon position paper delivered to congressional staff on Friday and obtained by ABC News says giving the award to the Fort Hood victims could, quote, irrevocably alter the fundamental character of this time-honored decoration and, quote, undermine the prosecution of Major Nadal Hassan, the alleged Fort Hood shooter, by materially and directly compromising Major Hassan's ability to receive a fair trial. Jim, I think it was pretty clear from what we know of this attack that this was not workplace violence, as the government has tried to say. He made it very clear that this was his version of a jihad. These people are victims of the war on terror, and for the government to pretend otherwise is truly shameful.
Walk me through some of this, Greg, because I'll be honest, the government's position just flat out does not make sense to me at all. It's not like we've got some other Nadal Hassan who shot these people, right?
Right.
We've got the right guy, correct? So it's not a question of did he do it. The only question is, did he do it because he was committed to jihad and he was, you know, supportive of Al-Qaeda and wanted to kill as many Americans as possible, or that he's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, right? I mean, that's you know, is it insanity versus he's an enemy combatant?
Right.
Regardless of what the military gives these folks Purple Hearts, I guess the idea is that they're suggesting that this was enemy combat. Am I correct?
Correct.
And as a result of that, they fear he won't get a fair trial, that the jurors or whoever is judging him will not give sufficient consideration to the possibility that he's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, right?
That's their fear, allegedly, yeah.
Why not both? Why can't he be a cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs jihadist? I don't quite understand why this concern would be sufficient to say, hey, we're not going to give these people who wore the uniform and who were injured on duty, the honor that they're due. It strikes me as you know, making a mountain out of a molehill. Look, you know, the defense of Nadal Hassan is on his defense attorneys. And in the end, the question is, you know, is he going to be in an insane asylum for the rest of his life, or is he going to get more, or is he going to get the death penalty, right? I mean, those are the only options here.
Right.
I'm still trying to see the compelling reason to say, look, even though somebody who wanted to kill them and was screaming, you know, Allah Akbar was shooting at them, we're not going to give them Purple Hearts because it might, you know, sway the minds of jurors. Don't we see this in legal dramas all the time? Something gets mentioned and the judge tells the jury disregard that.
Right.
All right. So just tell the jury to disregard that, right? I just solved that problem here. I don't understand. Pentagon, call me. I don't understand why this is such a huge issue here. The idea that somehow Nadal Hassan is not going to get a fair trial because the military decided to honor its members who were wounded and in performing their duties. It's just baffling and mind-boggling.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. This one is especially juicy. You know, we always talk about how excited we are that Michael Bloomberg's term as mayor of New York City is nearly up. At the end of the year, he'll be out. Listen to the process now that's been uncovered by the federal government about an attempt to basically buy the Republican nomination in this mayoral race. This from the New York Daily News. Federal prosecutors allege that State Senator Malcolm Smith, Democrat of Queens, conspired to bribe two key Republican Party bosses in a failed attempt to capture that party's nomination for mayor. The 28-page indictment released Tuesday by the U.S. attorney in Manhattan depicts Smith, City Councilman Dan Halloran, Republican of Queens, Republican Party leaders Vincent Tabone of Queens and Joseph J. Savino of the Bronx, and two Democratic officials from Spring Valley, Rockland County, as cynical, greedy bunch willing to sell their offices for cash or greater power. The indictment portrays Smith as willing to buy the nomination by having a rich developer, who has actually turned out to be an undercover FBI agent, pay Halloran, Tabone, and Savino for arranging the backing of the Bronx and Queens Republican machines. Then on Valentine's Day, Tabone and Savino were paid $25,000 and $15,000 in cash, respectively, to arrange the Smith endorsement. But Tabone was already backing someone else for mayor. On March 18th, Savino and the Bronx Republicans voted to back Joe Lota for mayor. Both men, in other words, took the cash but never delivered. Jim, clearly, integrity at the top of the totem pole there in New York City.
If you're going to be a crook, be an honest crook, okay? Don't betray the other crooks that you get into dirty deals with. Because if there's no honor amongst thieves, where is their honor, you know? Basically, this is kind of the Operation Chaos, kind of worst-case nightmare scenario of Republicans, of Democrats together and running stealth candidates in our primaries to win our nominations to then tank in the general election. Am I understanding this correctly?
Exactly.
That's very bad. And it kind of one of the things we as a party have to examine is how in you know, New York City, we had Republican mayors for a while, and then Bloomberg flipped, and then basically you ended up with a kind of billionaireocracy. But basically, when the richest man in town is your mayor, it seems like a formula for trouble from where I sit, because he spent like, what, $80 per vote in the last couple of elections. New York City has not really had anything resembling a free and fair election since 97, I'm guessing. So you end up in this circumstance in which there really is no functioning Republican Party. And, you know, people just kind of forget about it, and they just kind of ignore it. And it's, okay, it's one thing if it's New York. You know, you look at other cities like Philadelphia, Camden, Cleveland, Trent. I mean, Detroit. One urban dystopia after another has no functioning Republican Party, even though Democratic policies are largely what's gotten them and Democratic mayors are largely what's gotten them into trouble decade after decade. It is baffling and mind-boggling. Hopefully something like this will be kind of a wake-up call for the New York City Republicans, that they need an actual functioning city party and candidate, and to make a crusade to get, you know, you're never going to have a down-the-line conservative elected mayor of New York City, but there needs to be an alternative view to the blue mafia that we used to be metaphorical and now perhaps is a little less metaphorical up in New York City than it is currently running the city politics.
You know, Kevin Williamson said when we were talking about the latest Bloomberg ban while you're on vacation that he was actually going to miss Bloomberg given the crop of candidates that might be following. I thought he was crazy. This story makes me actually believe he might be onto something, which is really, really sad for people in New York City, especially any conservatives up there. So good luck.
You know, I guess the advantage, Greg, is that an old-fashioned corrupt politician, when they take away your large soda, they'll do it at gunpoint.
Jim, great day today. See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.